The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Micro Brew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I am joined by my colleague, the incomparable Kurt Hoge. He is in Arizona watching this Milwaukee Brewers baseball team come together. It's, what are we at? March 9th, March 10th. I think we have a pretty good handle on what this team is going to look like, at least I like to think I do. I have a list. I wrote some names down, Kurt, which I'd like to talk about. I'd like to talk about what's left as far as position battles for this roster. There are not many of them. I think what is left is compelling, but I don't know. We'll see. I'd love to compare notes with you, Kurt. You have been there for a week. Last time we chatted, you had just arrived. I could barely speak. I could barely move. I am slightly better than I was last week. It has not been a good time, but I am good enough to talk to you. Kurt, now that you've been there a week, what has been the biggest thing you've seen? What's the best story that you've been following or the thing you're most interested in now that you've had a few days to get your feet wet in the Arizona sun?
So I was just going to start by telling you a little story that will, it doesn't yes, involve you, stories. But it does. If you know what I'm saying.
I don't know what you're saying, but now I'm super interested.
To me, it involves you, but to the average observer, the non-sicko listener of this show, It would not involve you.
And also, well, it's about Craig Yoho, then.
It's not. Apologies. I don't know if you can hear a click. There's a car driving past. I'm on my patio right now recording this. I have to be outside because, you can't hear it? Okay, well, I'm on a patio in Arizona. It's very warm, but my kid is sleeping inside, so she's supposed to be sleeping. So this is where we're doing it from. So if there's any stray audio, it's either the kid or cars. Anyway, JR, the story. This morning in our session with Pat Murphy, he started talking about how about fashion in the modern environment and how the concept of throwaway fashion. You buy something, you wear the heck out of it for a little bit, and then you get rid of it. And then he said, I'm someone that is attached to clothes. He has five shirts and he cycles through them. And then he said, but I now have a sixth man that I've added to the rotation with it's a collared shirt. So I'm thinking through, I'm like, yeah, no, actually I know exactly which shirts these are. There's a black hoodie. There's like a charcoal gray zip up with a different color hood. There's a couple t-shirts in there. There's like a 200 Club t-shirt. That's his brand, or him and his son's brand. So I didn't talk about you in this setting because I was like, they're not going to get it.
No.
But I stashed it away in my head. I didn't say anything to you today, just so you could hear this today. You, the man of five polo shirts. And also, in an homage to you, you can see, the listeners can't, but I have two buttons unbuttoned. No, actually, one, two, three buttons unbuttoned on my, my collared shirt right now. And I'm going to stop showing that off because it's a little too sensual for the pod. But
absolutely.
I'm the pool boy in honor of you. And Pat Murphy also has five shirts in rotation. So
I have never felt so connected to Pat Murphy in my life. I am very much somebody who gets attached to five or six pieces of clothing, including t-shirts that I've had for years and years, Kurt.
I've seen the shirt you're wearing, the Pepsi shirt. I've seen that many times before as well.
Yes. The Pepsi shirt is a good go-to for me. I mean, really, all it comes down to, Kurt, is that the shirts that still fit me after they've been through the dryer a few times, like if they pass that test, that's like a big first or second date step, like in the relationship that I build with my t-shirts. So like if you've survived that step, you're probably in the rotation for the long haul. Granted, it's hard to crack that rotation because there are only so many of them. The shorts that I have are really shorts that I've had for 15 years, Kurt, probably. I am not
are
a
they,
guy.
Are they goes, cargo?
Cargo no, shorts? Well, the shorts that I would wear in public are cargo. Although, as I've gotten older, I've become less scrutinous of those shorts as well. It's more, you know what, like athletic shorts work. Athletic shorts work in public unless I'm like going to be out in public. Like maybe if I'm going to a bar or a restaurant, we're not talking athletic shorts. But if we're just going to like the bank, that's athletic shorts. I mean, my goodness, if we're going something, athletic shorts. For a walk? Unquestionably athletic shorts. So I don't really leave. Pat Murphy, I did not know your game, Pat Murphy. I didn't know that we had this much in common. Right now, Kurt, I am in a very interesting position. I love this position where we're about to go into a work week and I have the full allotment of polo shirts available to me because I've been sick and I haven't gone into the office for a week. So the laundry has gone through a cycle and I now can choose which of my six polos I want to wear tomorrow. Today was church. I don't use a good one on church. I use like a medium one. It's an important selection process. I don't want to use one of the big, like the big hammers, because those are work day polos. So like I busted out a red Under Armour, very simple, something a lot of people have, you know, got it from Kohl's probably. I don't know, but you know, it's one of the mid tiers. Like I would wear it on day 6 or 7, and now yeah. I haven't burned one of the big fellas for this work week where I'm finally going back to the office after being sick. So this is a great, I love it. I love waking up and seeing the full allotment of the polos. My polo family is waiting for me ready. It's just going to be a great week. It's a great week. The last week for us before spring break, and I am fully loaded in the polo department. Pat Murphy, let's trade fashion secrets. I love that. I'm very excited about this.
If anyone is still listening to this,
why are they listening?
You haven't switched off to your music on your drive to work yet. I feel like you down here, because I think I packed 6 or 7 short sleeve collared shirts. And then I have a couple of like few other long sleeve, and I'm like, yeah, no, I see it. I have it lined up in the closet right now, just JR style. So, fashion hour with JR and Kurt probably has run its course now.
It'd be really tough to know whether to go pool boy or priest when I'm in Arizona in that heat. That's a temptation, mm-hmm. to go pool boy and lose those top buttons. What a time, Kurt, to be alive. The Milwaukee Brewers are doing their thing out in the sun. We have not seen many of the, you know, the load-bearing players at all, really, in this spring training. I think that's probably pretty standard. We saw Nestor Cortes for the first time all spring long on Sunday in a relief appearance, actually. But for the most part, we haven't seen much. We've seen Christian Yelich hit a ball over the batter's eye. We've seen a sprinkling of you know, some of the pitchers here and there. We've seen a sprinkling of the hitters here and there. But for the most part, we're seeing a lot of, like, you know, Vinny Capra and Manny Margot and things of that nature. So if we're talking about storylines on the field, I mean, it's probably somewhere in the neighborhood of where Brandon Woodruff is at. But storylines on the field, what right now is sort of the prevailing thing? I mean, we'll talk about the roster in a minute. But just in terms of the guys that we know will be contributing – is it Rhys Hoskins hitting 4 homers? Is it, you know, Christian Yelich being healthy? Like, what's really jumping out for you?
Yeah, I think it is Rhys Hoskins. I'm hesitant to jump to it because it's a spring training result that's kind of making me – I feel like I'm working backwards here. The spring training result is making me think, oh, like, he looks better. Like, he looks like he's moving better. He's a little – maybe a little slimmer, super noticeably. Doesn't need to be, like, that's where his power comes from, his strength. Right. But like, just a little more agile. Pat Murphy said he's more comfortable in his body, which I felt was like a very. Aren't we all? Aren't we all aspiring to be comfortable in our own bodies? I typed that quote out and I was like, "There's a lot of context for this."
Yeah. Well, it depends what polo we're wearing anyway, that day.
The pool boy, Rhys Hoskins, is the pool boy of the spring training. He's hitting spring training homers, and that's not really what I care about. But he could look. You could look bad in spring training for sure. you can, it can be alarming, and we're not there with him. It's encouraging what we're seeing from him. So that's for sure. Maybe where I would start. Christian Yelich hit a homer. He hit it 440 feet straightaway center over the batter's eye. Again, the results here don't super matter with him, but he's slowly working back into games. Like, I think he has 7 or 8 at-bats right now, has played the field just a little. He said he needs to still get into, like, the base running a little bit. He still plans on stealing a bunch of bases, which I thought was interesting. He could have said they're going to roll it back, and now we'll see if that's actually the case, if they're going to roll it, if he actually does roll it back, or if it's just lip service or whatever. But theoretically, he's going to run some more. He just hasn't done it yet, but we'll probably get to that soon. So status report on Christian Yelich is things are fine. And those are probably, I think, two of the big offensive players we're watching this spring. Because, like, I don't know, what do I need to see with Bryce Turang? What do I need to see with Jackson Churyo? What do I need to see with William Contreras, who's basically just up there swinging? Not a whole lot. Sal Frelick is a name that comes to mind. He has gotten larger. People have discussed that. He's now Italian beef. Nothing from that. You on that? Okay, wow.
I've heard it. I've heard it. It's good. It's good. It's fine.
Oh really? That's out there. That's too bad. I dropped that one the other day, and people loved it here. Oh. So I'm bummed that that's already gotten out there. That's actually not
best shape
clever.
Of his life guy got the Italian beef references.
It's pretty low hanging fruit. So now that I think about it, so dang it, I thought I was doing something there. Anyway, I'll write about this probably later this week in a little more depth. But just as a little teaser, Sal Frelick said he is trying to be more aggressive in one strike counts, zero strike counts. He said he felt like he got into his two strike approach and got defensive a little early last year. And you know, he was like, "Oh, this guy's nasty. It's 0-1. Okay, I really can't let him get to 0-2 on me." So maybe we'll see that carry through. I don't know. But that's those are sort of some of the things that have stood out to me.
I think when you look at the position player mix here, it's a little, I kind of wonder if Mark Canha or Manny Margot, I kind of was under the assumption one of those guys would make the team. It's going to be hard for one of them even to make the team if this goes how I think it is. Now, let me just run that through. Let me just, because it's 13 sure. and 13, right? We're still doing
that. Yeah, let's bounce this.
Okay, so there's some obvious, there's obviously a ton of obvious guys. There's Churyo, Yelich, Frelick, and Mitchell in the outfield. That's four names right there. There's William Contreras at behind the plate, obviously. There's Hoskins, Turang, and Ortiz at the three spots. I think Ollie Dunn is kind of a lock to make this team.
He's a lock. Okay. He's a lock.
So, and then Jake Bowers probably is your backup first baseman. And Eric Haas is your backup catcher. Now, that's already 11 of your 13 names. Now, if Caleb Durbin, you feel, is also a lock to make this team.
Caleb Durbin, so, I don't want to say he's a lock, but from just hearing, when Pat Murphy talks about certain players in a certain way,
yeah,
you can kind of put two and two together. And so I feel like, I mean, they have to have someone in the platoon with Oliver Dunn. I just have questions about Caleb Durbin's defense. It has left questions this spring, for sure. But I still think that he's I mean, I'm not going to give him a lock, but you got to put him in the group when you're just like, if it's a group, it's the top 11, no doubt.
Okay. Well, I mean, if he's in there now I've already spoken for 12. That's 12 names that I've brought up.
Yeah.
Who's left is it's either Vinny Capra. I haven't said yet. And he's out of options. And Mark Canha, I haven't said yet. And I haven't even, you know, like Tyler Black isn't even then on the list, or Isaac
that's
Collins.
That's not happening.
Or Andre Monasterio.
Tyler
happening.
Black opening day is not happening, no.
Okay. Well, that's fine. Which, but there's still, to me, 14 guys for 13 spots.
Yeah. I mean, there's Tyler Black discourse to have here, too, but we may even get to that later. I don't think Jake Bowers is a lock.
Okay. But then who do you think Mark Canha is the backup first baseman?
Well, because yes. And here's why. The Brewers play 7 lefties in their first 10 games.
Okay.
And they need another right-handed bat, especially because Blake Perkins is hurt. They're going to be lefty heavy in the outfield. You can't not be. So Manny Margot could crack the list. But his defense, it was bad last year. It hasn't, I don't want to say it's been bad in spring because it hasn't. There's been limited opportunities, but some of those opportunities just haven't looked crisp. And he hasn't hit the ball particularly great either. So I think if you're all things equal between him and Mark Canha, they're going Mark Canha. I mean, the guy took the manager's number. So, yeah. And there's
that
a
does
history
seem
there too.
Like he's here.
Yeah, right. And it's like it doesn't work super. Like I still don't think you want Rhys Hoskins penciled in for 150 starts at first base, and so this is not a straight platoon. As it would be with Bowers. Well, maybe not straight platoon because Hoskins would still play the lion's share and Bowers could DH. But whatever. It's not a platoon, but you could still play Canha at first base. You're not really going to play him in the outfield. Murph didn't sound super enthused at that possibility. And they have enough coverage with the four outfielders. So I think Canha over Bowers right now. But okay. We will see. I mean, neither guy is – Canha had a good day at the plate today, but neither guy is really asserting himself dominantly, and I need to be on this roster. But I'm not sure that's what it's about with Mark Canha this spring. It's sort of – I don't know. You get a feel about how the team is viewing a player, and it's not so much that Canha's on the bubble as he's on the team.
Well, one of the differences between Canha and Bowers is that you could see a scenario where Bowers accepts a minor league offer, stays at AAA for X number of days before they find a way to bring him back. Because like you said, the lefty, presumably they won't be facing this many lefties early on in the season as they are now. And then, they have a relationship with Jake Bowers. Again, he signed, they basically cut ties with him and he couldn't find a better offer anywhere else. So I don't know how many teams are pounding down his door to give him a big league roster spot right off the gates. So, but
correct.
That is a.
If Bowers and all things equal, Bowers and Canha are not, you tell them they're not making the roster and they have to opt out. Canna's going to opt out. I think Bowers might take the minor league assignment. He might stay on his minor league contract.
Yeah.
Because I don't think Mark Canha is interested in going to the minors at this point in his career.
So, like you said, that leaves – I mean, Tyler Black is well on the outside looking in. And
Yeah.
Are we coming to the end of the Tyler Black road?
I can't say we're coming to the end of the Tyler Black road, but this is how it felt with Joey Weimer last camp. You're kind of waiting for him to show you something, and – you're not seeing a ton of it. The defense isn't markedly better. He hasn't had the results. He had an injury that slowed him down a little bit. And again, spring training results, they do not matter, but you kind of want to see guys hit the ball hard, get on base a bunch, find little ways to showcase their tools. And we have not seen it from Tyler Black this spring. I think realistically, he wasn't going to probably make this team unless he went berserk this spring. So that's why it's not the end of the world. He can go back to Nashville and get some more at-bats there and bide his time. But it's tough. It's tough when Rhys Hoskins is here and they have Canha and they have Bowers in the organization. I mean, they went out. The signing of Jake Bowers this offseason in particular was a bit of a flag as to why would you do that when you have Tyler Black if you like really, really, really like the guy. I mean, think about how third base went. They didn't sign any guys on minor league deals really there. How they let Bryce Terrain, just they kind of fed him to the wolves. How they did the same with Joey Ortiz, but they're not doing it with Tyler Black. And so it's sort of what they're not saying, I think, that I'm reading into. I don't want to write him off. I definitely don't want to do that, but it's got to change directions here sometime for things to go as I think we all hoped they would when we saw his upside a couple years ago.
All right, let's do the same thing with the pitching staff because there's also, I think, a couple compelling questions there. So your locks are the starting five, of course, Peralta, Cortez, Myers, Savali, Quintana. There's five names for you right there. Trevor McGill, of course, is making this team. Nick Mears will make the team. Yoel Piamst, out of options. He's got to make the team. Brian Hudson, Jared Koenig. Rule 5 guy, Connor Thomas, who, of course, you know, could not make the team, but they'd have to send him right back to St. Louis, offer him back to St. Louis. So I think he's on there. That's 11 names already, which leaves a couple guys sort of on the fringe. You've got Tyler Alexander and Elvin Rodriguez, both guys who were, you know, signed at big league deals. And then you've got Elvis Peguero, who has been very effective and obviously has some experience. He's got an option, though, so that could come into play. And that doesn't leave room for Abner Uribe, and it doesn't leave room for Craig Yoho. And you've written about him, and we've talked about him, and everyone knows how we feel about him. He's like the most dominant reliever they have in camp. I understand if they can't, you know, feel that they feel they can't put him on the big league roster right away. But if you want your best bullpen out there, it would involve Craig Yoho. There's no way you can convince me it would not involve Craig Yoho. But this is a roster crunch, you know, like I don't know which of the three between Alexander, Rodriguez and Peguero don't make that opening day roster, let alone, you know, that's not even Grant Anderson or Grant Wolfram or, as I mentioned, Uribe and Yoho. Like, I don't know what happens with those guys. So what are you thinking there?
Yeah, you laid out a pretty good picture. I don't remember exactly your order there, but the eight bullpen spots. I've got six. I think it was six locked down. And then Connor Thomas, I feel like, is going to be on this team unless they work something out for him. Or not saying anything's going to happen, but the Spidey senses are tingling just a little bit that there could be some move of some sorts in the works still. Like, not a big, but a minor, but a more of a minor thing. I don't know. This is...
Unpack this for us.
This is just how the pieces seem to be moving. I don't know. Like, you hear some whispers down here of other teams being super focused on the Brewers, sort of their depth pieces, their possible roster cuts, but they don't really have a ton of roster cuts per se because they all have options. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and they do have a plethora of them. They still could use help at a couple other spots. You know, there's. It's unlikely that something big happens. But, you know, there's always moves when guys are getting cut and moved around and guys opt out in other camps as well. So, I don't know. I'm not saying anything's going to happen, but just a scuttlebutt, just a little Phoenix scuttlebutt for you. But, yeah. For the bullpen. Connor Thomas, for now, I feel like he's on. He's pitched well. They took him, despite the fact that he's not a normal Rule 5 pick and that he's older and he's already developed and he's already been on the 40-man with St. Louis. So I feel like that's number 7. And then number 8, between Abner Uribe, Elvis Peguero, Elvin Rodriguez, Craig Yoho. Those are the guys for me. And then the top 6, of course,
you've got Tyler Alexander already.
He's a lock.
On.
Tyler Alexander's okay. On the team. Yeah, no question about that.
Okay.
And then that's tough. That's tough. Luckily, these guys have options. But there is a real case for every single one of them. Yoho has been the best performer at camp. Just disgusting. This is the first time I've got to see him with my eyes. And JR. That thing is moving. As Devin Williams once said about his changeup to me, that thing is thanging. And the slider / curveball, oh my gosh.
I mean, I wish you were here. Well, I do too. Part of me, Kurt, is thinking, I don't want to sound doom and gloom here, but like he throws so many crazy moving pitches and I'm just like, how many bullets does he have in that holster before arm trouble catches up with him? Like he's had a history of that already. Like,
yeah, but can
we get him to the big leagues before things fall apart? Like, let's do this now.
I mean, the arm history theoretically is not, it
helps his cause.
Maybe. Yeah. It doesn't help him in the fact that he would be a starter without it. And he would be like,
oh, sure.
I mean, we're looking at like he would have been a first round draft pick if he had a healthy year as a starter in college with that stuff, he would be a first round draft pick.
Yes, I get that.
I don't think he's not going to be on the team unless, I mean, there's a scenario in which he throws 10 innings this spring and he strikes out 22 and they just say, screw it, you're on the team, and doesn't give up a run. And that's possible with how he looks this spring. I just don't think he's going to be – I think he's just going to go to AAA. He's not in the 40-man. Elvis Peguero also has looked really good. His sinker has more movement than we saw last year, especially laterally. So, maybe he can get in on right-handers a little more with that and get some of those weaker ground balls. Maybe he'll miss a few bats with the slider. I don't know. Admir Uribe, obviously, we know what the potential is there. And then Elvin Rodriguez has his start a couple days ago was a little shaky, but he's got electrics. He's got electric stuff. Chris Hook said he was popping 22-inch induced vertical break on his fastball in his last start. So that's a crazy number. Just actually a stupid number, really. So I don't know where they're going to go with it. Right now, I think I would say Elvis is going to be in the building when they go to New York.
Elvis and Elvin, or not Elvin, because I still don't. Let's say Yoho's out of the picture, which I think we have to assume he is. I still think there's too many pitchers. Unless they work out a deal with Connor Thomas so that they don't have to send him down. You absolutely cannot put everybody that we mentioned, and you know, because then Tyler Alexander, Elvin Rodriguez, and Elvis Peguero are the last three guys for two spots.
Yeah. The good thing about this year's bullpen construction for the Brewers, and in terms of the opening day roster picture, is they don't have to, like, they don't have to be super worried about it. They're not pigeonholed. They can send Elvin Rodriguez down and call him up in a week and a half when someone else goes on the IL. Craig Yoho can come up in three weeks when you got a spot on the 40 man and a guy's got a significant injury. They don't have to DFA these guys. You don't have to carry Bryce Wilson. I think the bullpen's in a really good spot because each of these guys that we're talking about on the bubble have looked nasty. Abner has definitely walked some guys, and he will do that, but he looks like himself on the mound again, and that's a good thing, and he's throwing 100. So normally, like the last bullpen spot, you're kind of like, oh, here's this guy that they claimed, and he's out of options, and he's not very good, but he's depth. No, these dudes are sick. These dudes are filthy.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, I think last year we predicted something to the effect of, well, the first guy up will be JB Bukauskas because they'll send him down, but they'll need him right away, and that was the case. I don't remember if that was the guy, but I think it was. Like within a week, it was like, well, he's going to be here. I'm not even worried about, you know, who makes opening day so much as, you know, what sort of they commit to, because if they say to themselves, you know, we have to have Craig Yoho on the big league team, that actually is a move that will cost somebody because that's a 40 man spot. And I don't think they'll do that. But, you know, do you say Elvis Peguero, you're one of our guys now, or you're still in that limbo between AAA, even though you're obviously big league caliber, are you still going to be in that limbo? I'm interested in what they eventually do with Abner Uribe in terms of his suspension. You know, you could argue putting him on the opening day roster is a good way to start using, because everybody's healthy. You know, you're just, everybody's rested. There's a lot going on in terms of like just off days early in the season. Like that is a good time to have a reliever serve a 5-game suspension, but you can't do that. And also, you know, you can't do that and then leave other guys off. It's just embarrassment of riches, which is good. You know, knock on wood, tomorrow they could have three pitchers go down, and then it's super, super moot. And we're talking about whether Carlos Rodriguez ends up with a spot on the opening day roster. You know, I don't think that will be the danger, but
hasn't gone great either.
No, it's been really rough for our guy Carlos Rodriguez thus far. Spring training results, whatever they may be. Yikes. So if all these position battles are we kind of spoken through them, man, and this is this pitching staff is only set up because Aaron Ashby and DL Hall both need to go on the injured list. Like, that's crazy how much depth they have amassed. You know, I knew they had, but you look at it now as you try to solve the roster and it's like, oh wow, the depth really is really is something special. What else is there for you? Like, we started to see some of the players get sent to the minor league camp, guys like Cooper Pratt, who did some impressive stuff and then got sent down. What are the other guys that you're watching in terms of, and like, storylines, maybe things that we aren't even thinking about because it doesn't impact this starting group of 26? What else is on your mind?
Robert Gasser's return. This might be something else I read about this week.
Talk to me about that.
He's on schedule. That's essentially it. Like, he's not beating the what the schedule's laid out for him. But no, he's throwing. He's like throwing in the mid 80s for velocity and in his intense catch play. He said he'll be on a mound, I think, start of May, if I remember correctly. I got it written down somewhere. And then that'll take a little bit of build up, but looking at maybe very tentative, he's coming back from Tommy John, but maybe a rehab assignment starting sometime in July, which puts him in position to be a deadline acquisition for the Brewers. And I told him that I did pass that along to him, that he would be the fans would be happy for him to be their deadline acquisition, the big deadline acquisition this year.
Yes. He
got a kick out of that. And absolutely, Pat Murphy would tout him as the deadline acquisition. He did it with Devin last year.
Man, do I hate that too. I hate that.
And so I'm still going to say I'm going to wait and see when Robert Gasser is pitching like meaningful innings for this team. It sounds bad to say, like, I'll believe it when I see it, but
sure, of course.
I just don't want to bank on it, even though it seems like everything's going great for him in his rehab right now, and he is totally on pace to be back this season. Maybe you will see him. I know we've expressed some, I don't want to say pessimism, but surely not optimism about, you know, what he could bring to this team, but maybe that's like 6 or 7 or 8 starts. Possibly down the stretch,
yeah.
And we don't know what the state of the rotation will be like at that point. But I mean, if you joke about the deadline acquisition, but if the Brewers, if you know, similar events had played back last year that they did played back this year that they did from last year, do they have to go out and get the starters if they have a guy like Robert Gasser coming back in early or mid August? Maybe not, and then you can bolster your roster elsewhere.
I mean, the way the trade deadline has gone, can a team even expect to get a starter? Like, the Brewers actually did last year with Aaron Civale and Frankie Montas, and nobody was wowed by those moves, but that was about as much starting pitching addition as you're going to see from any team at the trade deadline. The idea that you can get one of the top flight guys is really, you know, it's really far-fetched, I'm afraid. So,
They're not paying the price.
No, for sure. Is Oliver Dunn an everyday third baseman? Because he's looked okay. You wrote a lot about him at jsonline.com once you got down to Arizona. What do you see when you see Oliver Dunn?
I see him not swinging and missing as much.
Yeah.
So there's that. That's basically, I think, what's really important. I'm not sure still he's going to be. I'm not sure he's actually an everyday player, but there are certainly ingredients there for a good everyday player. And that's not always the case for these fringy sort of position players, which is what makes it an interesting acquisition for the Brewers a couple of years ago. Is it's a pop-up prospect in a way, but he has real exciting tools. His bat speed is off the charts. He has pretty good ball strike recognition. His defense is, I think, really underrated. He's pretty fast. And they've been working on him, and I wrote about this, they've been working on him with his contact pointing, catching the ball out further in front of the plate instead of kind of, he was letting it get deep and seeing it deep, which you hear about from hitters and as a good thing. But in his case, it's not always a good thing because you want to see it and then get out in front of it and lift it in the air. So the whole point of his profile is elevate to the pull side, and he didn't do that a whole lot last year. So they're trying to get more out of him in that regard this year.
All right. I could see it. I enjoyed your piece on him at jsonline.com. And if you didn't get a chance to read that, you should.
You sound unconvinced.
Well, you know where I stand on the third base situation. I would love for them to have gotten a different third baseman, but you know, this is what they're rolling with, and this is one of those decisions that the Brewers, I would have been really down on, and I am. I've said that, but this is one of those decisions that the Brewers make that ends up looking really, really good, you know, that they had it figured out the whole time, and whether that is Ollie Dunn, Caleb Durbin, somebody that we're not thinking about, Andrew Monasterio, like, I have no idea, but this is one of the things that they end up, like, looking pretty smart. And last year, it's the exact same thing, because I didn't think Joey Ortiz was a third baseman. And especially in the first half of the season, he absolutely was, you know, a big-time third baseman. Defensively, he was excellent all year long. But then offensively, you know, he tailed off, but he was still really, really valuable there for a really good chunk of the season. So, you know, they often know better than I do, Kurt. You might be surprised to know. They often know what they're talking about, I have to admit.
They do. This feels like this is definitely a calculated gamble in that, well, no one was available on the free agent market. We couldn't sign Ha-Sung Kim. And we couldn't come up with a trade either because no one wanted to trade their guys. So, all right, Oliver Dunn it is. He's got some upside. That sort of feels like what this is. And again, that's pretty rational. It's not, I don't think they're like super duper duper being cheap here. Ha-Sung Kim would be a great answer, but he's also out till what, May? So yeah, I don't feel great about third base. I don't know how you could.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some, like, what if Caleb Durbin's just a second baseman? Now, you could still move the pieces around and it might not matter. Joey Ortiz can play third, so then you're mixing and matching, and I'm not sure that the Brewers or Pat Murphy want to do that. You know, like Terang's playing short this day, then Ortiz this day. I think they kind of just want to have a second or a shortstop. So that means Caleb Durbin would have to play third, and it hasn't looked great over there, while second base just kind of fits his profile a little more. I don't know.
Okay. Kurt, I think that's it, man. I know that I don't know if I have anything else for you. Any questions for you? The sun has set in Arizona. If people are watching the video version of this, they're seeing that you are sitting on the patio and we can no longer see your face. It's very mysterious.
Don't worry. I've got my flashlight. I've got my flashlight on up here, so I have like at least a shadow.
Yeah. You could get like a ring light or something. I think the shadow's cool, though. It's very... I don't know. It's disquieting. I kind of enjoy that.
I'm gonna write it out here in the pitch black with a shadow. Theoretically, there's a light on this pad. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I was trying to come up with a trivia question on short notice, and unfortunately, I realized I had not come up with one. I would say though that I've got something that should be landing soon at jsonline.com. 50 years ago, this April, is the return of Hank Aaron at Milwaukee County Stadium as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers, and it is a much more involved story than I remember. I remember, you know, like, I wasn't alive, so I don't remember it at all, but I knew that he was, you know, came back with the Brewers for 2 years, very celebrated, longtime Milwaukee Brave. And he comes back as he's kind of brought back to the organization in the final 2 years of his career, and he's in his 40s. And he comes back and he kind of hits what's left of his, I think he had 22 homers over those two seasons to round out his 755 career home runs. And I found it pretty interesting because what I didn't know was how much he had really been driving the bus to get back to Milwaukee. He definitely, everyone thought he was going to retire, and he holds this press conference with the Atlanta Braves. He's like, well, I'm done with Atlanta, but I'm not retiring. I would like to keep playing. And he basically says, point blank, I want to go to Milwaukee. They treated me well.
Interesting.
So I absolutely want to go to Milwaukee. And so then it became a trade. And what, you know, they had to give up a pretty decent player in Davey May, who was, I think he was an all-star for the Brewers a couple years earlier. He'd been an all-star in 1973, but he'd kind of been unhappy in 1974. So for the 75 season, they trade him to get Hank Aaron. And it was really like considered a lopsided, like more talent as going to Atlanta. But it was for the rights to bring back Henry Aaron. And it ended up working out okay because Aaron was fine. Dave May fell off pretty quickly. I mean, he had a decent 75 season. but he ended up falling off pretty quickly. So just it was fun to poke around on that. That should be posting at some point soon at jsonline.com, although we have a lot with NFL free agency and the NCAA tournament. I don't know exactly when the Hank Aaron thing is coming, but I did enjoy looking back at that. But that's all I have, Kurt. Do you have any trivia questions that you want to throw out?
No, but I was just going to compare that to a modern day, I guess, Mark Canha is the modern day Hank Aaron.
Yes, that's definitely what people are saying. It's Andrew McCutchen, right? Like it's Andrew McCutchen. That's the guy who former Brewer.
Back to Milwaukee.
Yeah.
It is Andrew McCutchen.
Yeah, that's the one that comes to mind in terms of just as beloved as a player can be in a fan base, goes to other places and then comes home and has been pretty effective for them, actually. So it's not so bad.
Fairly effective, yeah.
All right, Kurt, we're going to do this again very soon. Go ahead.
My bad.
No, especially during
AnthroCon. AnthroCon.
The legendary tweeter that is Andrew McCutchen. Furries. Are you there during AnthroCon this year? Have you looked ahead at the schedule to see when Pittsburgh is hosting the Milwaukee?
It's one of the first things I look at when the schedule comes out. Because then if that is the case, then Todd and I are like casting lots to not go to Pittsburgh. That's serious. No, they're not. They're not there this year. I have looked.
That's too bad because that's amazing content. All right, Kurt, that's going to do it for this edition of Micro Brew. We'll have more next week. Obviously, keep checking in on jsonline.com. Kurt Hoge is there in Arizona. He'll give you all the updates on this Milwaukee Brewers team. Kurt, we will chat with you again very soon. Take care, my friend.
That's all.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Nothing says summer like a rich, creamy ice cream float from Skyline. Made with two scoops of fresh vanilla ice cream and your choice of Barq's Root Beer, Barq's Red Cream Soda, or any of their Coke products. At participating Skyline locations while supplies last.